The Athletic.
Hello, welcome back to 1874 on The Athletic, a podcast all about Aston Villa Football Club. I'm Dan Bardell, joined as ever by the Aston Villa / Birmingham City writer, Greg Evans. Now, Greg, I'm again going into a podcast with you off the back of a Birmingham City article. What is going on?
Well, look, you know, I'm a Midlands reporter. I'm not just specifically an Aston Villa writer.
Well, yeah, I didn't know that.
Ever since I became a journalist, I've written about Birmingham City and West Brom and Wolves. No, I have. I've done a fair bit over the years.
Trying to find a new niche for yourself. I'm not very happy about it. I don't want to say like a Birmingham City podcast popping up and then you suddenly appearing on that every week. No one wants to say that. But I suppose as long as you keep your Villa stuff up, I guess we can just about forgive you. And don't forget, throughout January, you can subscribe to The Athletic for a special price. You can enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from all the very best writers around and Greg, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts for less than £1 a week. So let's start with that article that you've released.
Yesterday.
No. Well, you had a little dig at me before we started, and I've carried it over into the podcast, to be honest. But let's start with your article that's been released in the last 24 hours then. A potential chance for Villa to pounce, really, on Birmingham City's current state and what they're doing with their academy.
Yeah, and look, you know, I know we've had a little giggle just, but and I know this is a Villa podcast, but it is sad to see the way that Birmingham City seems to be falling apart at the moment. You know, it's a very messy and somewhat confusing situation over there as well. You know, the club are £110 million in debt, and sources have told me this week that if compensation packages can be agreed for some of the best young players at the club, you know, some of whom want to leave as well because of the chaos and confusion there at the moment, then they'll listen to offers. So, you know, it's an opportunity for Villa, of course. It's an opportunity for Wolves as well, who are a very aggressive academy at the moment as well. You know, they're recruiting aggressively like Villa are. So, yeah, you know, what we might see in the future is Villa picking off some of Birmingham City's best young players and integrating them into their own team. So judging by what we've seen last week from the kids, it looks like the future's quite bright for those in claret and blue.
Yeah, I mean, I wish this had happened a couple of years ago. We might have been able to pick off Jude Bellingham. That would have been nice in the Villa midfield. But I get what you're saying. It's not nice to see. And to be honest, it isn't. And if you look at such a good place that Villa are in at the moment and compare it to Birmingham, you do actually wonder whether the teams will ever cross paths again and actually play a league fixture, because there's no way Birmingham are going to go up in the next few years in the current state. And Villa are obviously flying now. We're not going to be in a relegation battle, so we're not fighting for our future for the first season in a long time. The stark contrast in the two sides is there for everyone to see, isn't it, Greg?
Yeah, look, you know, the last sort of decade almost has been very dismal and disappointing for Birmingham. I mean, you know, we're coming up to the 10-year anniversary of when they won the League Cup, obviously beating Villa on the way. So, you know, there weren't great memories for Villa that year, but there certainly were for Birmingham City. But since that, it's all been downhill, really. When they got relegated, they've never really threatened to come back up, have they? And they've actually been quite fortunate, I think, to stay in the second tier, because they've been battling against relegation for some time. But yeah, as I mentioned, it's a little bit confusing because, you know, the academy staff at Birmingham are still trying to push forward with the Category 1 status. You know, obviously Villa have got that, but you know, if for Birmingham to push that ahead, it's quite expensive, and at a time where they're £110 million in debt, you know, it remains to be seen whether that money will become available, and obviously what will happen to Birmingham this season as well, because they're down there again, aren't they, battling to stay up.
I mean, they always stay up. They always seem to get themselves out of it in the Championship relegation battle on the last day, to be fair to them. But this is a potential funny situation, because I guess away from the players that are currently there, actually picking up younger talent, I'm talking about 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds now, families and players are going to look at Birmingham City and think, there's absolutely no way I want to be integrated into that absolute chaos. Going to a Villa or a Wolves is a much more appealing option, whereas because Birmingham have had a decent record of bringing players through in recent years, they were probably picking up good players because there was a pathway. Now you just look at it and think it's a mess, and that's really going to benefit Villa and Wolves.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, West Bromwich Albion have always had the, you know, the strongest academy in the Midlands for some time now. But that's Villa are certainly taking over them. You know, they've recruited aggressively, hired their best staff, you know, in the last 18 months or so. And, you know, clearly there's a pathway for Villa players now, as we're seeing with Jack Grealish and Jacob Ramsey and some of the younger players that played in the FA Cup game against Liverpool. Now, you know, we know that not every one of those players is going to feature in the first team, and it'll probably be, you know, just a handful of them, you know, if any, that will ever feature. But the performance they put up, I thought, was really impressive, and it just shows that the academy's going forward now, and it feels like, certainly speaking to family members of young players across the board in the Midlands, that, you know, they're really excited about the way Aston Villa are moving forward. And you know, they recruited a couple of foreign players, didn't they, in the last few months, you know, before the Brexit new rules and regulations came into force. And pretty much everybody you speak to there said that the sales pitch from Mark Harrison and the staff at Aston Villa was what convinced them to come. So it's really exciting times.
I'm going to be nice to you now. There's many good things about doing a podcast with you and speaking to you about Villa, Greg. But one of the best things at the moment is the fact that you are at the games, and you were there on Friday. A really unique perspective to speak to you after having been at such a game. Well, I mean, the whole thing again was carnage leading up to it. But what was it actually like at the ground that game?
It was a really strange situation because it was such a quick turnaround, and you know, the job that I wanted to do is what I wanted to give our readers and subscribers and the Villa fans out there just a full lowdown of what actually happened over the chaotic 24 hours. And you know, I spent the whole of Thursday afternoon and evening, entire Friday morning, afternoon and hours leading up into the fixture, just trying to piece together what had actually happened behind the scenes. And, you know, it was a whole crazy situation. Mark Delaney having to put together a team very quickly, Villa waiting for test results to come back from the second bubble, so to speak, at Bodymore Heath, because the youngsters train on a separate pitch, so they're not involved and in close contact with the first team. And then just, you know, little things like getting to the ground and seeing that the car park was, which I'm so used to seeing, packed with Range Rovers and Porsches and Lamborghinis, and there were just some very modest cars, quite similar to mine, in the car park, and a lot of empty spaces as well. So, you know, it was crazy because literally half of the team can't even drive. You know, they're not old enough to pass the test and even taken the test or whatever. But and it was funny at the end as well, there was a nice minibus that had been put on to take some of the stragglers home. So yeah, fair play to them. They were very impressive, and they certainly did themselves and the club proud.
Yeah, I mean, when I went to school in Sutton Coldfield as a kid, I always used to see Sid Cowans drive past in this little minibus, picking up the players to take them to the training ground. It's mad to think that actually the players who were that age that I used to see, and obviously it's different players now, that's them playing a first team game. I mean, the whole situation was just absolutely crazy. But the thing that people are going to overlook a little bit as well is there was actually like more than just the first team missing, wasn't there? There was a few other future stars who weren't able to play for Villa.
Yeah, well, this was the, you know, one of the quite frustrating things as well, because I think when, you know, it initially became clear that Villa would be playing an under-23 team, there was quite a lot of excitement in seeing the likes of Aaron Ramsey, Jacob's younger brother, who's gearing up to be an exceptional talent, Carney Chukwuemeke, you know, another very good player who we've seen a little bit of
as well. He was the one I wanted to say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think everybody at Villa speaks so highly of him. You know, they're really excited about how far he can go, and he's literally just turned 16. So, 17. So, it's a case of, you know, he's got so long to go in his development. But if all the noises are as we hear, and he develops in the way that the people at Villa expect him to, he could be a really, really exciting player at a really young age. So it was a shame that those two and a couple of others were missing. But it just shows that they're actually edging closer to the first team now, because, you know, they're mixing with the first team. And I think it was probably the clearest sort of hint that those type of players would have maybe featured in that game had it not been mixed up by the outbreak.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Who did impress you from that starting 11? There was some really good performances in there. I really, really enjoyed the game. Who in that lineup impressed you on Friday?
Yeah, I liked the goalie, Akosanadé.
Yeah, thought
he was very good, very measured and calm, and made a couple of decent saves. I thought the two centre halves, Mungo Bridge and Dom Revan, who I've seen previously for the under 23s, I thought they acquitted themselves well. You know, if ever they're called upon in the future now, I think that game will stand them in good stead. They'll feel quite confident going into it. Lamar Bogard, who I've written a fair bit about, I think it's pretty clear to see that he's developing very nicely. Literally, again, only turned 17 last week, so he's got a bright future ahead of him. But for me, I think Cain Kessler is probably the most exciting. An old coach of his told me last week that he reminds him of Trent Alexander-Arnold, the way he gets forward. You know, he's so quick and direct, very skillful. I really think Villa have got a star on their hands now. I think that he got forward quite often and tried to just create something different. You know, at a time where the Villa players were a little bit apprehensive to get forward you know, they were almost a little bit safe at times, and understandably, because they're up against, you know, Champions League winners and league winners.
Yeah,
it's always going to be tough. But I just thought Kessler gave it a little bit more and was quite adventurous. So looking forward to seeing how he develops. You know, the key is now for Villa to manage him right and try to get the best out of him in the future.
To me, he looks the closest. Obviously, he was on the bench once last season. I think we discussed it on this very podcast, actually, that we've now got, obviously, Matty Cash, who is undisputed king of the right-backs at Villa. You've got Elmo, who, let's face it, probably isn't going to get an extension to his contract in the next 6 months, so he's going to be off. Gilbert doesn't look like he's fancied at all. Is there a chance that in the next year or so, Kessler comes up and he becomes that competition for Cash?
Yeah, or certainly the number three, you know, the third choice right back. The key now for Villa is, with the new sporting director in Johan Langer, and a very structured setup at the moment, everybody's singing off the same hymn sheet. So the owners like to hear off Langer regularly to hear what's happening in the younger, the age groups going down. And you know, you look at it now and you look at the fullback situation and you think, well, Neil Taylor and Elmo, as you say, probably won't get extensions. Gilbert will be on his way. So that just leaves the first two first choice fullbacks. And You think, where do you go from there now? Do you look at it and think, well, there's a couple of decent players coming through in the U setup. Do you send them out on loan for a season with one eye on thinking that the 22-23 season is the one for them to really be pushing for the first team, and then maybe, you know, go and sign somebody just as a stopgap for next season? Or do you look at it and think, let's really take it on a level, maybe even look to improve Cash and Target and have those as the backups next season, knowing that you've got the youngsters a year further down the line? So Villa want to become self-sustainable. They don't want to be spending, you know, millions and millions of pounds on players when they know that they could potentially develop them in the age groups and bring them through. If you can get two or three players coming through now in the next couple of years, I think it'll be that they'll be pleased with that, because I think, as we've mentioned on this podcast for so long, you know, now that academy's been dining out on Jack Grealish's name for far too long.
Yeah, and before that, pretty much it was Gabby as well. So there's like a decade in between each player coming through at the moment, it feels like. So they definitely need to get someone else into that first team soon. I think the special thing about the other night really was that, like you said, alluded to at the towards the start of the podcast, realistically, one or two from that group will go on and become first team regulars for Villa. That's just the way it is. But such a unique and special moment for them all to make their first team debut at exactly the same time at Villa Park. And they'll always have that now, won't they, that group? And that is a special thing.
Yeah, look, you know, it's an amazing feeling, isn't it? You look at some of the players that have moved on, you know, the guys around Jack Grealish, you know, they're still so close. Some of them go on holiday with them together, and, you know, they'll build friendships and relationships that will last for life, you know, in the future. And that group will all be bonded together by that night and that performance. And hopefully a couple of them make it.
Yeah, quick one on someone who we do think will make it. Louis Barry, obviously, he got the goal, lovely goal, pried a little bit on the young Liverpool centre-half and ran through and finished like Michael Owen, to be fair to him. Really, really composed finish. Obviously, now he scored against what was a strong Liverpool side. Fans are going to call for him to be in and around the first team. I've seen a load of stuff on social media saying, well, he's already done more than Davies in the fact he scored at Villa Park. I think that's a little bit unfair on Davies. They're different types of players as well, but there is going to be that clamour now, Greg, to get him on the bench, especially as there's nine subs. Where do you sit with that?
Yeah, look, I get the clamour because he's scored in a big game. But, I mean, you know, let's be brutally honest. Liverpool's defence was probably weaker than some of the defenders that Davies has played against and scored. So, and Davies is certainly more equipped for the Premier League, even though he's missed a couple of chances. So, I personally have Davies ahead of him still at this point in time. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing if he gets included on the bench at any time soon. Just from speaking to people in and around the club and people who know the England setup, it feels like he's not quite at that level to come off the bench and affect and impact a Premier League game at the moment. Hopefully he's not too far away, but I just think at such a tender age of 17, he's probably not quite there yet, but certainly showed signs of what he could become. I mean, it was a brilliant run through, brilliant finish. And clearly, you know, he's got something about him. So, again, it's another one to monitor and see how far he can develop.
So I wouldn't expect to see him on the bench at City next week then, from what you're saying?
No, I don't think so. I don't expect him to, no. I think that Villa have got attacking options that they would prefer to use ahead of him now. Senior options, okay, they're not centre-forwards, you know, like him. But I still think the likes of Trezeguet when he's fit, Ross Barkley, Keenan Davis as well, who came off the bench in the last league game, remember, and almost scored against Manchester United. I still think all of those get ahead of him.
There is an argument for it because Villa have nine subs. And quite a lot of the time amongst those nine subs, you actually have a set back four on the bench, which you don't really need. You don't need two centre-backs and two full-backs on the bench. It would be nice to see some of these youngsters attacking-wise come in and fill space on the bench. But I do get what you're saying. I mean, it is what it is. We'll see what happens. But another reason some academy players might be needed at some point again in the league is Villa and COVID. And players are on the mend now. We obviously wish them all the best and hope that they're all fighting fit soon. Horrible illness, was speaking to Tails yesterday. He's had it, sounds absolutely horrendous, but when a big number of your squad have had it and the after effects, is it a worry that this could derail Villa's season a little bit now, Greg?
We need to find out how serious the symptoms are for individuals and what the lasting effect is. I'm sure once the players train again and we're expecting them to be back on Sunday at Bodymore Heath, providing the tests that they've already had are not returned negative, I'm sure the number crunchers will go through and look at the various fitness metrics to see whether they are still up to speed. And, you know, it all depends, doesn't it, on how serious the symptoms are and how many players might have got it. You know, the message from Villa last week was that, you know, it was spreading quite quick as it was across the country. So, you know, the tests that they're, the results that they're waiting for might throw up even more positive cases. So the weekend game and obviously the midweek one against Tottenham that was cancelled, they were always going to come too soon. I think we pretty much knew as soon as the positive cases were recorded last week and the players were put into isolation that, you know, these Premier League games were going to come under serious threat. So I think what people have to realise is the Premier League and the FA Cup are completely different. You know, the Premier League set the precedent, didn't they, when they allowed games for Newcastle, Man City and Fulham to go ahead. So Villa always expected the same treatment. The difference with the FA Cup game was that the FA were desperate for the game to go ahead. So Villa pretty much did them a favour, you know, by playing the young players and actually fulfilling the fixture. You know, ideally, they would have liked to rearrange that too, but they went ahead with it. So the key is to get this group back together, get them training again, assess them and see where they are now.
Yeah, because we play again on Wednesday, Man City at the Etihad will be the next game now. So that then leaves Villa with five games across 12, 13 days. I think it is. That's an incredible amount of games to play, especially if you are suffering after effects as well. It's going to be a real tough run for Villa, isn't it?
Yeah, I really hope the Man City game goes ahead. I mean, you know, forget about how good Man City are at the moment. You know, they do look almost unstoppable. But we need to see these Villa players back out there playing. And that game was a rearranged game in itself, wasn't it? So it'd be good to get one of those knocked off the list, because I think at the end of this weekend, Villa are going to have four games in hand on some of their rivals, and, you know, that's just not ideal.
I wouldn't think any team in the history of the Premier League has ever had four games in hand at any stage. It's just that obviously the world is absolutely nuts at the moment, as is, but that's nuts, four games in hand. That's massive. It's a lot of games. It's a good job, really, that we're doing well, because if we were in relegation trouble, fighting relegation like last season, that could really help send a team down, couldn't it?
Yeah, totally. I mean, this is what I've written in The Athletic on Friday. You know, I just put some of my thoughts down about what might happen with the four games in hand. So the good thing for Villa is that they've set themselves, you know, real high standards at the moment, and they've got a decent number of points on the board. I don't really think it matters how much those lower ranked teams pick up in the next couple of weeks. Villa is still not going to be sucked into a relegation battle or any dangers like that. You know, they're safe this season. It's just we don't want to see this season, you know, falling away now, because they set themselves up so nicely. And look, you know, it's not outlandish to think that this group of players could finish in the top six, seven or eight teams in the division now. You know, that's pretty much on, I think, if they continue the form that they've showed in the first 15 games. But there's going to be a period, well, you know, in the next couple of weeks, certainly to start with, but there's going to be a period where they'll start feeling heavy legs, because playing all these games together, and look, we know Villa don't change their squad very often, do they? So it's going to hit them at some point, but hopefully it's not too damaging.
Do you think that'll affect the January plans at all now?
It's a good question. Yeah, one I don't necessarily have the answer for right now. You know, Villa are willing to let a couple of players go out still if they get offers for them. I've said all along that incomings, you know, that they're going to be quite quiet. They're considering one attacking reinforcement, but only for the right money. There are players on that wanted list. You know, the recruitment team are working very hard, but more so for next summer. And I think it's just another waiting game. You know, we're waiting to see what happens this week. They've got three games in quick succession, haven't they? So that will leave them still three or four days after the Burnley game, is it? It leaves them three or four days with, you know, that they could jump into action in the transfer window if they needed to. It's mad, isn't it? You know, with all these rearranged games and the way the world is, you almost forget there's a transfer window open at the moment, don't we?
It's been very quiet, very, very quiet in general.
Yeah, across the board, really, isn't it? You know, you just think, when's this going to jump into life? I mean, typically it does in the last three or four days, usually, of the winter window. But I think Villa will just react to the situation at the time. Still got 2 weeks, haven't we?
Yeah, so you don't sense that there's a panic over this COVID thing. You won't expect to see Danny Drinkwater rock up in the next couple of weeks.
I sincerely hope Danny Drinkwater doesn't turn up, no. Because it just didn't work for him, did it?
Good to know.
I mean, look, you know, if you contrast it to back to last season, at this point last season, it was panic. You know, we were absolutely ripping into the team, weren't we, saying they weren't good enough. I never give up fully on them. I did think that they had a chance of survival, which they did. But, you know, at this point, I think they'd just got Rainer in. Drinkwater was on the way, wasn't he? And then, you know, Samatta would eventually come in as probably the eighth choice striker that Villa had targeted. So that's the difference this season. They're not panicking at the moment. They're happy with the squad, and hopefully, you know, some of the players that are injured will come back fitter now. You know, we're 2 weeks closer for Wesley's return, aren't we? Ross Barkley's hamstring hopefully might have healed, and Trezeguet could be closing in as well.
I mean, it feels like about 10 years ago now, but it was a year ago that we got back from Marbella and interviewing Thomas Hitzlsperger for The Athletic. We got back and literally we went straight to the Man City game the next day, and obviously we got hit for seven. I hope that's not a sign of things to come on Wednesday, just as City are finding form again. But I've backed just every game to get something this season. I think the City game's actually the first one I'm a little bit worried about.
Yeah, they're in great form, aren't they, at the moment? I've watched every one of their games in recent weeks, and you know, I think Phil Foden coming into the team and actually holding down a place now, he's made a big difference, hasn't he? Looks like their back four, or you know, three of the back four at least, are certainly settled. The new goalie seems to be doing quite well. It all seems to be working very, very nicely for them, and they're grinding out results as well. Some of the 1-0 and 2-0 wins haven't been quite as pretty as we would have seen of a Manchester City team in previous years, but crucially, they're getting the results, aren't they? And they'll be looking at this Villa game as a big one, because they've got Liverpool as well, haven't they, to come up with soon.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
We move on now to a new section. It's either going to be a top five or a top three, and this week it is a top three. So Greg's going to pick a different category each week, and then I have to come up with a top three or a top five. I mean, it could be anything from Villa goals, Villa signings, Maddie's Villa moments. And today Greg's come up with top chance, haven't you, Greg? That's what you've decided to go for.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I think we're all missing singing along at a stadium, aren't we? Or listening to the songs in the stadium, or being part of a full house somewhere. I mean, it just feels absolutely crazy for me still going to these games and there's no fans on site. So I'm trying to bring back a bit of positive energy, and I'm hoping you're going to come up with some of your favourite songs, Dan, from the years gone by.
I mean, yeah, obviously I've been going for a long time, but it's hard to think of the best ones, really. I mean, obviously I'm missing being there.
I was after funny ones. Have you got any funny ones?
That's what I like. I'm a bit worried that I'll have to sing on the podcast, which is a bit of a concern. But
you've definitely got to do one.
But we'll see how it goes. Obviously, we'll try and get the listeners involved as well with some tweets, maybe see what they come up with. So the first one that obviously sprung to mind is the LA, LA, LA chant over the last few years. I just think in the games like where we've been playing, we've played Liverpool and won 7-2, even the run towards the end of last season where we just stayed up, I just think about what the atmosphere would have been like and singing that song, and I associate that song with a successful promotion season as well. It was a really good atmosphere around the place when Villa won 10 games in a row, so I think that's got to be in there because I just absolutely love that chant, to be fair.
I don't know about that one, mate. Look, I think it's one that gets the fans going, but
that's why I like
it. You didn't even make it. It's not even one of your own. You know, you've ripped it off from someone. Come on, let's have a better one than that, surely, Dan. Well, that's not even one of your own.
You're going to continue to be disappointed then. I mean, if you only tell me on the day that I've got to do something as well, it's very, very difficult. I had to think fast. The second one, God knows how many years we've gone back here. Villa were playing Newcastle. I couldn't tell you what year it was. I just remember which player it was, and Warren Barham was playing right back for Newcastle. He played the whole game. He was there. He was on the pitch, and Newcastle made a sub. And the guy on the tannoy said that Warren Barham was coming on for someone. And obviously Warren Barham was already on the pitch. So the Villa fans then obviously just started singing, "Two Warren Bartons, there's only two Warren Bartons." And I just remember that being quite funny.
I like that one. Yeah, as a kid. You definitely redeemed yourself from the first one.
Yeah, nice bit of singing as well. I thought it was in tune, which is always helpful. I just found that funny as a kid.
That's
just
a good one, yeah.
Just a funny moment. People
off
thinking
the cuff
on the
as
spot.
Well, isn't it?
Yeah. It was good. I'd always remember Warren Barham just because of that chant, really. He doesn't really stand out for anything much else in his career to me, but that chant. And the third one I've got is, you remember when John Carew was a bit of a naughty boy and he was not playing in the game, or he got caught, I think, going to a lap dancing club on an evening before
a
game.
Which he always denies, I think, doesn't he? Doesn't he say that he was just going there and drinking Coke or something?
And he was still out, though, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So, like, obviously we had the song at the time of John Carew, he's bigger than me or you, he's going to score one or two. But in the Ajax game, which was the game after when everyone had obviously found out about it, he wasn't playing. I don't think he was even on the bench that day because of that incident. So Villa, I can't remember the exact wording of it, but it was something like, "John Carew, he's bigger than me or you, he'll buy you a dance or two, John Carew." I just remember that.
Yeah, that's good as well.
They're the ones
that
stand out. It's hard to come up with off the cuff, Greg. I mean, you'll have heard your fair share of chants over the years as well. It's not just, shouldn't be just
there,
for
there
me
was
to come
a,
up
I
with
used to
things.
Like, there was a good one that I heard, yeah. The Gavin McCann one, which is good. Do you ever remember that one?
Is it to the Adams family?
Yeah, that's yeah. it. Yeah, I liked that one. I thought that was interesting. That was quite funny.
That was good.
But I just find when I go around the grounds, I like to hear original ones. You know, that's why I pulled you up on the LA. Because I think it was Liverpool who started that, wasn't it?
Yes. And, well, it was a foreign team actually that started it, and Liverpool nicked it from a foreign team. I can't remember who it was.
So right. Fair
enough. Most chants are nicked from somewhere.
I know, obviously, but they've got to start somewhere, though, haven't they? Do you know what I mean? We say that. I hate that reply. Well, most chants are nicked from somewhere, but they had to start somewhere, didn't they?
No, I know.
Do you know what I mean?
We don't strike me as the most creative bunch. I don't think we come up with many chants, to be fair, because there was a time before games when every player would have a song and you'd serenade each player before the game started. They'd clap the fans. Nowadays, only three or four have a song, really.
Yeah, I miss all that. I miss, like, you know, the warm-ups and every player gets a song. I think Man United used to do that quite well.
Yeah.
But
they come up with some good chants, to be fair.
Yeah, they're very creative, aren't they? Very creative. A lot, you know, the Solskjaer at Ollie at the Wheel was quite a good one, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah,
you know,
they've had
one
some
that you
ones.
Wouldn't have ever really thought of. But yeah, oh, no, well, thanks for those, Dan. Yeah,
I did my best, mate.
You did well. 2 out of 3, mate. Yeah. We'll give you 2 out of 3 for them.
Thank you. I'll take it for a first draft and a first step. What have you got coming up then, Greg, on The Athletic in the coming weeks? I know of one thing that you've got that you probably can't talk about, which is very exciting, but what else have you got coming up?
Yeah, so, I'm hoping to get to some games, really. You know, I feel like I haven't been for a while now.
Yeah,
I didn't think of it like that. But I think it's been a month since I went to a game, other than the FA Cup game, a month since I went to a Premier League game. So it'd be nice to get back in that groove. I'm also quite interested to see find out why and how Anwar El Ghazi's picked up this season. So gonna dig a little bit deeper into that, see what my research brings up, because I think five goals in 6 games, wasn't it, before
from nowhere.
Yeah, so you know, it's a good talking point at the moment, and I think the fans have seen a different side to him, so hopefully I can produce something on that that'll be interesting. But yeah, that's it really. How about you? I never really ask about what you're doing.
I'm doing various things, Greg. You know, I've got my fingers in a few pies, but probably nothing worth talking about on this podcast. I'm trying, Greg.
Everywhere I turn on Twitter, you're there.
My boss would have a field day if he delves on Twitter. Well, it's been great to talk to The Athletic's West Midlands football reporter, Greg. You'll be back with me next week. We'll be sometime after the Man City game, won't we? And we'll, if it goes ahead, hopefully, and we'll try and dissect what happened in that game, where hopefully, as always, Villa can get something. Thanks again, Greg. Thanks to everyone for listening as well, and up the Villa.
The Athletic.